Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
This month, besides being the season of Thanksgiving, here at KBOO we celebrate Native American heritage. Tune in throughout the rest of the month for special programming hosted and produced by Native American creators, as well as programming highlighting Native American, First Nation, Indigenous, and Aboriginal cultures here on KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here on KBOO 90.7 FM and available online at kboo.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey. Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KBOO 90.7 FM. Share with us your memories, experience, and journey of your life. First and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here at KBOO 90.7 FM.
Hello everyone, you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. For Marcus Lopez, I'm your host, Larry Smith. On today's program, demythologizing and deconstructing the Thanksgiving Day holiday, as we hear from three prominent Native American women from different nations on their perspectives on what Thanksgiving means. All that and more here on American Indian Airwaves.
You can hear when the moon shines. The lone blue elf in the black of the night. You can hear the whisper in the valley. And you know when Kamakani blows to the Bahu drum, it's the warriors who are marching down the mountain. Because history ain't no mystery.
The fourth Thursday of every November signifies the mythological and settler colonial violent holiday known as Thanksgiving. In fact, 1970 signifies as the 350th anniversary of the Pilgrim Landing approached, when Wamsutta, known as Frank James, a member of the Aquinaw Wampanoag Nation, was invited by Massachusetts Governor Frank Sargent to write and give a speech at the ceremony. But when James shared his speech with Massachusetts state officials, he was told the speech was too aggressive and extreme. Subsequently, state officials asked him to read a statement written by a public relations professional instead. James refused, and the censorship of Frank James' speech helped spark the creation in 1970 of the National Day of Mourning, a gathering held every quote-unquote Thanksgiving on Coles Hill in Plymouth to honor Indigenous ancestors and the struggles that Native people face today. At the location of the National Day of Mourning lies a plaque titled National Day of Mourning, and it states, "Since 1970, Native Americans have gathered at noon on Coles Hill in Plymouth to commemorate a National Day of Mourning on the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. Many Native Americans do not celebrate the arrival of the Pilgrims and other European settlers. To them, Thanksgiving Day is a reminder of the genocide of millions of their people, the theft of their lands, and the relentless assault on their cultures. participants in National Day of Mourning honor Native ancestors and the struggles of Native peoples to survive today. It is a day of remembrance and spiritual connection, as well as protest of the racism and oppression which Native Americans continue to experience. Today on American Indian Airwaves, in part one of a two-part interview, Marcus Lopez has the honor and pleasure of speaking with two Native American women who are activists and cultural educators, plus more. Melody Talcott is of Seneca, Cherokee, and Potawatomi descent, and Kawasante McGregor is of the Kanawake or Mohawk Nation. They both join us in part one of this two-part interview on what is Thanksgiving. We start with Melody Talcott introducing Kawasante.
We're talking to Kawasante McGregor, Bear Clan mother of Kanawake.
I'm speaking in my Ganyagaha language of the Kanyangahaga people, which is people of the Flint or Spark. I said, welcome everybody. My name is Kawasante. My Kawasante name means icicle melting. My colonial name is Carol McGregor. I'm Kanyangahaga, which is Five Nations Iroquois Confederacy, or Five Nations Confederacy. The French people called us Iroquois because we all speak same Iroquoian language. And the British refer to us as Mohawk, and Mohawk in to them referred to flesh eaters or cannibals. And I live on the reservation called Ganawage. Ganawage means on or by the rapids, which is like 15 minutes away from across the St. Lawrence Seaway from the island of Montreal, where we refer to it as Jochage. Or and Jochage means the place where the people divide from.
Thank you, Kawasante. My name is Melody Talcott, and I am Nero Dagwado, and the Chukuya Gea, Galagan Yoya, Mizua, Amak Galagan Aniana, and my English name is Melody Talcott. I descend from the Seneca, Cherokee, and Potomac people, and I'm honored to be here today. And I invited Kawasante to speak with me because the topic today is Thanksgiving, and the Haudenosaunee people have a Thanksgiving address. This is the prayer, and could you speak to us about that, Kawasante?
Yes, we call it the Ohanagariwadekwa. It means the words that come before all else, and it's one of our original ceremonies that we do. And when we do it for before we have a ceremony, or we do it before we have a meeting or council. We also do it when we wake up in the morning. You can do anything like a small Thanksgiving address where you just thank the, like when you're thanking the bird life, you thank like in general all the bird life, or if you're on the other side of the spectrum, you could thank the eagle, the sparrow, the owl, the raven, the, or you can go and make it a long Ohanagariwadekwa. And the way I like to do it is I like to thank the three levels of creation and start with our foundation, which is all the bug life and the insects that cleanse creation of all sickness and diseases that are within the earth and on the earth. And if without them, we wouldn't have everything that is around us. And one of the reasons why I like to start with the bugs and the insects, which we call Odinuwa Su'a, all the insects, is because they're very tiny. And because they're very tiny, people sometimes think that they're higher and above those little tiny creatures, but they don't realize all the functions that these little tiny creatures do for the people. I mean, we could, the earth can live without people, but the earth can't live without all these little tiny creatures. And basically, when we give thanks to everything in creation, these are all our brothers and sisters. So we are no, we are not bigger or higher than any of these other things that are around us, from the rocks to the raindrops to everything that around us. So, and one of the important reasons to give thanks for these little tiny creatures is to make sure that people understand that they have a place as guardians and protectors of all of creation. That is their function as people, when they're protecting the bug people, the rock people, the tree people, the animal people, all these things that were put here, not for us, but for to make all life possible. And we give thanks to all of these things to make sure that we keep them sacred. And when you keep something sacred and remember that it's sacred, then you protect it. And that's why Native people have the ceremonies, because even though year after year the cycle continues, and the cycle is every year the sun rises and sets. We have over here where I live, we have the four seasons, night and day, and everything like that. The cycle is the same over and over again. But what people don't realize is that you learn something new at every ceremony. And what's cool about the ceremonies when we do the Ahanda Gari Vedekwa is that people realize that how we fit into this world. Everyone has a place, everything has a function. I think right now in today's society there's a lot of people who are lost because they don't they're not taught that they have a place and responsibility. They're basically wandering around, and I think that's one of the problems that is facing us, is that people are not reminded that there is ceremony. And then whenever I talk to Native or non-Native people, I remind them that there is ceremony, and they just have to remember it. And it's all got to do with the cycle of life. It's not just what the Natives do. It's what all creatures did. Like, for instance, the maple. When we talk about the maple last time, the maple tree just does what it does. It's not told what to do. It just does that. It's only human beings that decide and have a choice every day in whether or not to do their instructions, their original instructions that they were given a long time ago. And when people, that's why the Ahanda Gari Vedekwa is there, to remind people that they have to do these things. It's their responsibility.
Oh, thank you so much. That was wonderful. And about this, since we're talking about Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving, the American celebration, but especially with all the myths about the first Thanksgiving, about this information that goes out that doesn't even match what you said right now, the important things, what you said, Native people. And that's why I think it's important to talk with you, because in the West here, they really don't know. In around 1621, that was we have a whole different history, but we don't know what went on in the East. You're talking about ceremony with nature and the original instructions. Melody, what did you think of what we just heard?
Yes, well, I've been thinking long and hard, and I do this every day. I think about first contact, because my ancestors were there, and the story of the first Thanksgiving is a lie. And the people of the first Thanksgiving are the Wampanoag people, and I do not speak for the Wampanoag people, but I can speak for my ancestors. And what happened here long ago was that Thanksgiving was every day, every minute of every day, as the scholars on the explained to us, something that our ancestors did from time immemorial, according to the original instructions. And what happened here with that Thanksgiving myth is a cruel distortion of the actual story. And although I cannot speak for the Wampanoag people, their history, from the way I understand it, the idea of pilgrims and what has become the national myth originated in the 1850s, as a sort of a retelling of the story, with leaving out what really happened. And so what really happened is that contact started long before that. It started in 1520, 1530, and ships arrived and people came and diseases came with them. And a lot of times these ships were received in kindness and in the old way, as people traded from the Aleutian Islands to Patagonia forever. And so when these people came and they were sick and they were hungry and they suffered from scurvy crossing the seas, the people all up and down the East Coast, from Labrador down to my people in Virginia, would receive them, give them food. This happened with the Powhatan Confederacy that I descend from, the Pamunkey and the Potomac people. They would give them food. They would help them survive. And there was a completely different understanding of what was going on there. And with the first Thanksgiving that people remember now, the understanding was that these people would settle in a friendly manner and have the welcome extended to them with permission to live on the land that was the land of the people here. But instead, those understandings, those treaties, those commitments were broken from the very beginning. And the story is a very, very sad one. And the native people are left out of the story. The story of the Pilgrim Fathers is a colonial story that soon leaves out the terrible genocide that happened immediately. So
thank you very much.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Gawasante McGregor and Melody Talcott on demythologizing and deconstructing the Thanksgiving Day holiday here on American Indian Airwaves. And now back to the interview.
I was taken aback by the strong commitment to tradition, the strong commitment to honoring the, we talked about the climate crisis, but all the young people and not so young people talked about bits and pieces, but just reminds us of this discussion, reminds us of the everyday being thankful. My question is to both of you is, what do you want the young people to see in this time? It's not, because it's not only in reaction to the myth, but also it's a reaction to colonialism in the settler society, and that the truth has been hidden. What can you say about not only the truth, but yet how we interpret the, you talked about the original instructions. What message do you want to tell the American public at this point?
Well, with them there, can you speak to that, please?
Yeah, well, I talk with a lot of people, and a lot of times I ask them, like immigrants and things like that. Well, they're all immigrants, but I ask them, where are you from? And then they're like, or what nationality or what ethnicity you are? And then they're like, oh, I'm Canadian or I'm American. And I'm like, yeah, well, what were you before that? Oh, well, I'm Canadian, I'm American. And they don't want to go farther than that. A lot of these people don't, they feel like they got birthright status because their ancestors came here, and now because they were born here, that they automatically have rights to this land, and they don't realize that how their ancestors got this land was illegal. And so a lot of times they don't want to talk about it because sometimes they feel guilty. And then because they feel guilty, there's no dialogue, and then sometimes there's a wall in between. But when we talk about it with them, we share the Ahanda Gardi Wadekwa and all the things about ceremony and the political processes, because this is what my ancestors, the medicine that my ancestors gave their ancestors when they first arrived here. It's just that they've forgotten it, and they didn't pass it down like how native people pass down things from generation to generation. Oral discussions about like the history of how things got to be the way it was. So that's one of their things that they have to bring back. They have to honor that. They have to have a discussion with native people who might be in their face right now, but you can't let that that guilt or that misunderstanding or miscommunication stop them from doing what's right now, which is to make sure that they're not only themselves, but they teach their children and their grandchildren the proper history, and for them to connect to nature, to make sure that the next generations don't ignore or neglect the native people that are around them, are right next door, that are their neighbors, or what land that their houses are on. That's one of the things that I talk about with the students that I give presentations to. I tell them the house that you're living on, the place that your parents work on, the school that you're being educated on is native land, unceded native territory, and for them to bring this history back into their classrooms and their homes, to talk about these things. And when they hear people talking, for them to correct this, and for them to also seek out proper information on this, which is a native person. We're still living. It's not like they have to go to a museum and look this up. They can go to many different native organizations, websites, or communities or whatever, and seek out and libraries and things like that, you know, books that were written. So they have all of this at their disposal. They just need to pick that up.
And Melody?
Yes. What my elders have always told me is that every human being is sacred, and every human being of every race had the original instructions long ago given to them, the original instructions. And therefore, that is natural law. That is the true basis of our life here. And this land is the land, everywhere we go on this land, we're walking on the remains of our ancestors. Like every piece of earth that we pick up with our hands, the ancestors were there. So wherever we walk, and so everyone that is here from anywhere in the world needs to remember that, and to remember that the original instructions were given to their own ancestors long ago. So this applies to each and everyone here, that respect for the people that are here and they're still here. So it's a very different way of looking at everything. And as Gawalenda said, there's plenty of people that are still here that one can seek out to understand what all of that means. And this Thanksgiving celebration that everyone is doing is can't be left standing the way it is. One has to go much further back and understand what happened there, and give thanks for being on this land, and understand that it is the home of the ancestors.
So I wanted to talk about this notion of the American society and needing a dialogue with grief and healing. Could you talk about that for a second?
You know, Lizanda?
Well, whenever I do presentations at these schools in Choachague, which is the island of Montreal, I bring song, I bring laughter, I bring music, I bring sound, I bring artifacts, I bring things, cuddly things for the kids to look at. I bring the animals. I remind them that the animals are the animals need us. I remind them that they all have, even the little children in their houses can do things for the animals to help them. Since we live in a four season climate, to help, like maybe make a bee hive in their yard, or maybe put a bird's house on their porch or something like that. And if they don't have one right now, some of these children don't even have porches. They live in apartment buildings. A lot of times they don't know what to do, but it's the information that they pass on that's really important. I've had some kids that I've spoken to that challenge their teachers, challenge the history books in history class about how much, what chapters, that when it comes to Native people and the colonial colonization, they have to challenge that, not just go over it, because a lot of times, a lot of these places, like the education system and that, they're very uncomfortable in talking to the children about this because they don't want to upset them, or they don't want the children to go to their parents and be upset about what they learned, about what their ancestors did to the Native people. So sometimes they avoid it altogether. But children are very smart, and they need to know the truth, and they can handle the truth because they're the ones that are going to be constructing the curriculum in the future, and they need to challenge it. Otherwise, nothing will change because the institutions out there are not changing. So sometimes it has to come from the youth who are in these institutions, that they have to recognize that it's not that what they're learning is not good enough and it doesn't go far enough. And that's why whenever I'm asked to go into one of these schools to do any kind of presentations, I go and do it because it's needed, because they don't have any help in that direction. We have to guide them, and we have to give them the medicine. If we believe that, like I believe, about the great law of peace, the Guyana Goa, we have the medicine to give them, and we have to administer the medicine.
It's so important what you're saying. A Melody, yes. You asked the question of, and what comes to my mind, indigenous knowledge and how it needs to be shared out there because of the grief and the tragedies of the past, and how we not only teach the children, but in order to not challenge, but educate people on the realm of indigenous knowledge about the nature. Talk about that for us.
Thank you, Marcus. Yes, I think small children from the very beginning, the parents, anyone who's in charge of their upbringing, should find out what land they're on, whose land they're on. I live on the land of the people of the dawn. The word Pamunkey, my ancestors, also means people of the dawn. So all the Algonquin-speaking people all up and down the East Coast called themselves the people of the dawn. And so I live on Abenaki land, which also means people of the dawn in Maine. I'm here right now. And so every day I am aware, and I give thanks to the people here that were here and still are here for welcoming me to keep this land, to have my feet on this land, drink the water of this land, to enjoy everything that is here. So every child should be taught, you know, about the territory, the original homeland, the original territory that they are on, that they're privileged to be on, and to acknowledge that every day. Not just a land acknowledgement, which is becoming popular, and then you acknowledge it, and then you move on. It's like, okay, I did my job. That's not how it should be. It should be a relationship every day. And you can even put food out, you know, berries. Anyone should do that, can do that, to show that respect, and to walk in an awareness of where people are standing today, you know, whose land it is. Someone I heard say about the original Thanksgiving of the land of the Wampanoag people, you could say, this land is their land. It's not this land is my land. This land is their land. So that's a place to start with every child, to make them aware of where they stand, where they live, and what a privilege it is to live in the land of the living peoples of today and the ancestors that were here long ago. So that's a place to start with the healing.
Thank you so much. Oh, you talk about the natural law. You talk about connecting to nature. What does that mean to you?
Yamazande, can you speak to that?
It means knowing your environment. It means how to utilize your environment, that you don't utilize it so much that you use up all its resources, that you keep and set aside some space for all the creatures that are around it. Like my property, for instance, my family owns 12 acres, and we do our best to keep the bush the same. We don't clear cut anything and make a big, nice, beautiful lawn. It's mostly bush and trees, so we keep it for the birds, the insects, and the squirrels and the chipmunks and all the little creatures that need a place to live. I don't put asphalt or pavement in my driveway, which would probably make it easier for me to park. But I don't do that because I want to keep the land as pristine as possible. I leave some dead logs around so that the creatures can have some place to hide underneath, and so that birds can find things to eat. I, as much as possible, like when I cook in my house, give offerings to the animals outside. Especially since we live in a four season climate, we need to take care of the birds, because it's like we have harsh winters over here, and some of them don't make it through the winters. A lot of people are so happy. Oh, we don't have a lot of snow. Oh, great, I don't have to shovel. But they don't remember that we do need a lot of snow, because the blanket of snow covers the roots and protects the roots on the around the trees to make the trees strong, and gives water to the trees all winter long, and helps the maples be very strong. And we have a good maple season. And I try to keep like the pickers and all the natural medicines that are around us that we use, like the burdock and the sumac and different trees like that. I don't cut them, because when we have forest programs back here, there's always something that they could pick so that we can have teas or medicines for the people. So it's not just about doing things and remembering the people. I talk about the rock people, the bird people, the tree people, all these entities that are here that have a life. Even the fire, when we have a fire, I try to teach the kids, don't throw any garbage in it. That fire is giving us life, it's helping us cook, it's giving us protection, it's helping us heat our tea. You have to treat it with respect. It is a living thing. It could hurt you or it could help you.
And you're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're speaking with Gawasante McGregor and Melody Talcott on demythologizing and deconstructing the Thanksgiving Day holiday here on American Indian Airwaves. And now back to the interview.
Same thing like the winter. It could hurt you or it could help you. Everything on this planet is a delicate balance that the choices that people make sometimes tips the scales. So we have to make sure, like in people's yards, instead of bulldozing a marshland because they want a nice flat grass lawn, you have to leave the natural things alone. Instead of clear cutting trees because it's not the pretty tree that you want there, some people want to plant trees that don't belong here when there's already trees here to begin with. So it's just about not taking too much, just taking enough, leaving some behind for everything that is around us.
Thank you so much. It's a lot of things that you described. It's interesting because here in the West Coast, our climate is so much different. We have quiet seasons. You know, in Southern California, we have blue skies, we have oceans, and we have, you know, like you talked about sumac, we have that in our different medicines too, that we need to take care of those, what you said, the other people, and we need to go beyond what's good for human beings, but within this element that we live in, this the nature. So thank you for those words. I wanted to ask about not only connecting nature, but what are the challenges that you feel that are around this quote-unquote Thanksgiving that we need to express? Because we know that Abraham Lincoln declared it a national holiday because he wanted to consolidate the continent, and because the culture was so diversified and people didn't know what their major role in within that, so he made that up. At the same time, what do you feel the challenges of Thanksgiving? Giving, we call it Thanksgiving because they took everything. What do you see the main challenges right now, the challenges we face today?
Yes, well, the Thanksgiving myth, it ends with this happy little story of the Wampanoags sitting down for a meal with the pilgrims. And for a long time, for 150 years or so, the children were doing in schools, they had pageants where they dressed up as Indians and pilgrims. And the story of the, you know, the people of the land just disappeared after that. In other words, it gives the impression that, you know, in this case, the Wampanoag people that I do not speak for, but that they just sort of gave in to colonialism, you know, so that, you know, all these happy, peaceful people started the United States, and that is where the story ends. And that is not where the story ended for the people of the first Thanksgiving, who were killed in King Philip's War. The white people called him King Philip, who were systematically killed, held from the land, and suffered the great injustices. So to think of the Thanksgiving story as this happy little story for children, and the story of peace and intercultural understanding, is a big mistake. And I would encourage everyone to research. The Wampanoags have a lot to say about their own story, and it's online, and you can read it. And there's a book written, This Is Their Land, that explains all this. And so one really has to think these things through, and because it's a terrible story. And people today, the Wampanoag people, they consider Thanksgiving Day a day of mourning, because of what happened to their people and to their land. So this holiday, and everyone is going around saying Happy Thanksgiving, and people should look into why they're saying that and where this story comes from. That doesn't mean one shouldn't be giving thanks. All the people of this land have been giving thanks since the original instructions were given to them. So it could be an opportunity to learn how to give thanks in the way of this land. But to just accept this pilgrim and Indian story that gets told by the colonizers is to buy into a story that is not true.
And that concludes part one of our two-part interview today here on American Indian Airwaves. We were speaking with Galasante McGregor and Melody Talcott on demythologizing and deconstructing the Thanksgiving Day holiday and what thanks means from two Indigenous perspectives. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
The world go round.
the song Standing People by Sandra Sutter off the album Aurora 12 here on American Indian Airwaves. And in the second part of our program today here on American Indian Airwaves, we speak with First Nations or American Indian activist, cultural educator, and elder Donna Augustine from the Mi'kmaq Nation. We start with her perspective on what is Thanksgiving.
What do I think about Thanksgiving? First of all, I'd like to introduce myself to you in my language, which is Mi'kmaq. I just told you that my spirit name is Thunderbird Turtle Woman, and I'm from the Mi'kmaq, from the northeast coast of what we call Turtle Island. North America, we refer to it as Turtle Island. So we're part of the we're Mi'kmaq, part of the Wabanaki, the people of the Dawn. So so we experienced contact. We were the first ones to experience contact. And so Thanksgiving, first of all, we give thanks every day. Our ancestors always gave thanks. The first part was in the morning when they first got up in the sunrise ceremonies. They would greet that morning sun, and they would give thanks for that new day. And, you know, they would give thanks for life itself, for water, water that is so precious. Water is life. They would give thanks for the trees, the spirits of the trees. They would give thanks for the animals, the fish, the birds, plants, everything that lives, everything that is. So a lot of people out there think that Native people, I've heard it said before, that they think Native people worship the sun. We don't worship the sun. We're given thanks for that new day. And so where I live is right by the ocean. So when that sun comes up, you know, in the east, we're the ones that greet that sun before anyone else. Unfortunately, one of the things that happened was that we experienced first contact before our brothers and sisters out west. We experienced colonization and assimilation before the tribes out west. So actually, there was a time that there was a bounty on our head that we were caught practicing our ways. Any of our ceremonies, the drumming, there was a time that it was outlawed. It was banned. But, you know, when we think about residential schools, I think the United States, they call them boarding schools. They took children away at random and at will. They would literally rip them from their mother's arms and take them to these places, trying to beat the Indian out of the child, you know, trying to change them because they figured, well, we can't change the adults. Let's work on the children. But it failed. Like, they were abused and in many different ways. And I tell people, when we think about residential schools, my dad was a residential school survivor. He was there from the age of 6 till 16 when he ran away and he joined the Army and he went to World War II. He lied about his age. He told him he was 18, but he was only 16. So he'd rather go to war than remain in that place. I'm a day school survivor. And so there was a big push towards eradicating our culture, and especially eradicating the ceremonies, because they knew that there was strength in our ceremonies. But we're still here. And so, and we still give thanks every day. You know, we're not bitter. We're not a bitter people. We share. We still share. I want to tell you that before contact, our people knew already through ceremony and through prophecy, because our history is not a written history. That's the indigenous people of this land, the entire land. It's an oral-based tradition handed down generation to generation through storytelling, writings on the rocks, for example, pictographs, petroglyphs, and prophecy. And so our people knew through prophecy, prophesied by many tribes, many First Nations, that other races of man were going to land on our shores. And we knew this. So here in the east, where we're from, what happened, some of our people, some had to go inland to take the sacred objects and take the teachings with them to protect them until it was time, until it was safe. And according to prophet, and then the other half, and then the rest stayed at the eastern door to guard the eastern door and to keep that sacred fire going. So the one that traveled inland, they were told they were going to stop 7 times along the way. The last stop, they were going to see food growing on the water. And can you imagine how long it took them? There were no vehicles back then. They used canoes, they portaged, they walked. So finally, they stopped that 7 times along the way. And then finally, when they reached the Great Lakes, where the Ojibwe people reside, there they saw food growing on the water, the wild rice. So they settled there. So we see the Ojibwe people, the Anishinaabe, as our brothers and sisters. We're related. We are related to them. But they kept the ways, the ones that left, they kept those ways. And it was the Madawan that kept those ways for us until it was time, until it was safe. I'm 70 years old, and when I was 22 years old, I got invited to an education conference. And I knew it was going to be more than an education conference. It was in Manitoulin Island, Ontario, with Wikwimikong, they call it, or Wiki for short. I attended my first ceremony, and I just cried because when I was a little girl, I didn't speak English until I was 6 years old. That was when I started school. Nobody in our community had a television set at that time. A couple people had radio. And we hadn't traveled, really. But my spirit knew, and I remember telling my dad. So I must have been about 4 or 5 years old, and I remember looking at him and telling him, "Hey, do me a mojik onno gnadamio. Sa'wegi. Also mojik se sa'wegi miskishna'i." I know that there's still people like us, as natives, that still pray in the old ways somewhere. My spirit knew it. I knew it. And still to this day, when I look at people like that directly in the eye, you know, some tell me, "Feel like you're speaking to my soul." I said, "I am." It doesn't always happen, but when it happens, it's like something speaks through me, our ancestors. So when I attended my first ceremony, I cried for the whole. I dreamt about it the night before. I knew I was going to be invited to something. I cried through the whole ceremony.
And you're listening to Donna Augustine, longtime cultural educator and elder, on demythologizing and deconstructing the Thanksgiving Day holiday. You're listening to American Indian Airwaves, and now back to the interview.
I just cried because here it was. Here it is. Here it was what I told my dad since I was a little girl. And this is what they took away from our people. I made up my mind after the ceremony, and I said, "I'm going to find out who I am as a Mi'kmaq woman, and I'm going to bring this back to my people." And I've done that. I was 22 years old. So when I was growing up, everybody spoke the language. We still had our strong sense of family, strong sense of community. We still had our fishing skills, hunting skills, trapping skills, all those things. The part that was taken away was the ceremonial component. So when we think about children that were sent to residential schools and boarding schools, the atrocities, it was like a safe haven for pedophiles, really. And it was horrible what they did to those children. So I tell people, when I think about the children in residential school, you can cut our hair, you can punish us for speaking our language, but you can never kill a spirit. Thus, we're still here. Our ceremonies are back. And so according to prophecy, when I attended that first ceremony, there it was. They kept it for us. And I brought this back. And so I brought this back to my people. At first, it was just my dad and I. Then there was a handful of 5. And then it grew. And there was no elder old enough to teach us our ways, so we had to go fast and ask directly. And so when I fasted, I had prayed for a vision. I went and took a little rowboat and rowed on an island all by myself. 4 days, 4 nights, no food or water. And I prayed, and I prayed to the Creator, and I cried. And I said, "What ceremonies did our ancestors do to Mi'kmaq people?" And the first ceremony I was shown on that last night, during I had like a vision, like a dream vision. I was shown the sunrise ceremony. How appropriate to give thanks for the day, and it begins from there. And so, you know, like I said, every day, give thanks. Before we eat, and by the way, through prophecy, we knew that that other people were going to arrive on our shores. The first thing that our ancestors did, they shared their medicines, because the ones that did arrive were very ill. They were dying of scurvy and rickets. They didn't have any fresh food or fresh water for days on those ships. Many didn't even make those long voyages. So the ones that did arrive, they're very ill. Our ancestors shared the medicinal tea with them, like pine needle tea, cedar tea, and other kind of medicinal teas. Then they gave them broth, fish broth, moose meat broth, and then they fed them. Then they shared their knowledge. They shared their food, and then they shared their knowledge of how to survive in this new land. Many arrived in the fall, so they didn't have time to prepare. They didn't know how to hunt moose. They didn't know this area at all. They would have froze. And there's here, not too far from here, Gobert's Island. There's a history of when some people from France, they arrived. It was late October, first part of November. They would have froze to death if it wasn't for the Mi'kmaq people. So our ancestors had already collected their provisions that they needed for the winter. They had dried nuts, dried berries. They had salted fish, dried meat, all the things that they need for the winter. And so they shared them. They shared them with the ones that arrived, because even though they were different, it's still our way. It's so important in us to share our food. So you can imagine first contact when down south more, when they first arrived, and they arrived in the fall time when the native people were having their Thanksgiving. The Haudenosaunee, the Mohawk people, still do their Thanksgiving address with their tobacco. They don't usually carry the pipes they use. They do their prayers with their tobacco, always giving thanks. So when they arrived, and it was fall time, and when you think about all the things that make up a traditional Thanksgiving meal, it was provided. So the wild turkey, the sage that goes into the stuffing, squash, yams, pumpkins, cranberries, all those things were from here. And our people were giving thanks, because when you plant a garden, you give thanks. You give thanks and you ask for the garden to grow. You make a request that the rains will come, that it will be a good planting season. So in the fall, when the food is harvested, you give thanks. You give thanks for the food. You put on, people come, they are people gathered, so our ancestors gathered, and they put on a big feast. And so when the people arrived, the pilgrims, you know, whoever it is that arrived, that's the first thing our people did, was share their food. I don't think they have Thanksgiving in Europe. I don't think so. I know they have it in Canada, United States, what we call Turtle Island, because it's so important for us to give thanks for our food. We're told if you give thanks for your food, if you always give thanks for your food, you share your food, you will always have food. And still to this day, we do this. I want to tell you, when Iraqi War happened and the troops were sent over there, my nephew and three other Mi'kmaq boys, they had gone to the United States because we have dual citizenship. You know, they joined the Marines, well, the forces, because they wanted to, or the Army, they wanted to, for a career. They didn't realize that while they're in there, that war was going to break out. And all of a sudden, they find themselves in Iraq. Before they left, you know, we did a ceremony for them to pray for a safe journey. And I told each and every one of them, before you go, take a little pouch and you take a little bit of soil from here, Turtle Island, and the spirits of our ancestors are in that soil. That soil is alive. The spirit of this land where the Creator placed us since time immemorial is in that soil. You take that with you. And so if anything should happen to you over there, your spirit will find its way home. But also when you get really lonely, you hold that pouch and you pray, you know, and it'll take that loneliness away. So they did that. And so while they were gone, of course, everybody was glued to the set to see if we could find them. And I remember hearing on CNN, they said that the troops were sharing some of their rations with the children. I knew immediately it was the Native people. I knew it. And sure enough, when I talked to my nephew, Ronnie, later, he said, yes, it was us, and it was the Navajo, you know, because it's in us to share that food. So still to this day, we share our food. My brother Jim would say, he MCs at powwows, and over here we have traditional powwows. He would say, how many places can you go to nowadays where there's no card charge for the whole weekend, you know, it's free? And he said, and they feed you for free, and they feed you the best. And that's exactly what happens here. You go to Miramichi, about an hour from here, there's powwows there. They give you the best. They'll give you salmon, fiddleheads. When you go to Burnt Church, Gunobudish, over there is salmon, lobster. They'll give you not just one, they'll give you all you want, really. And it's still our way. We still share our food. So giving thanks was giving thanks to the Creator for all, and giving thanks for the spirit of the plants. When you give thanks for your food, it is so important. When we make that spirit dish, before we eat, we put a little bit of every food into that dish, usually a wooden bowl, or even birch bark. And you get, when you're doing that, you're giving thanks to the spirit of the animal that gave up its life for us to live. You're giving thanks to the spirit of the plants that gave up their life for us to live. So even the vegetarians, you know, they can still give thanks, even they don't eat meat, because the plant life, it has to die in order for you to consume it. And then they give thanks for the fish for giving up its life to live. Everything. You give thanks for the water that cooks the food. You also give thanks for the spirit of the fire that goes into cooking that food. So when you're giving thanks for that meal, you're giving thanks for a lot. You're giving thanks that the crops grew well, you know, during that season. You're giving thanks that the rains came. And we are told that when your prayers are answered, when you're giving thanks, you must always give thanks, because we don't take anything for granted. We should never take life for granted. And I want to tell you that Indigenous people, we share a lot. We have our giveaways. We're told if you have two of one thing, give one away. You know, you don't need two things. We give freely, without needing anything in return. And I remember my dad saying, I don't think, you know, when you talk about collecting things and never giving away, he says, I don't think there's a U-Haul going to heaven, you know, with all the things you can accumulate. So it's very... So it's very important that we share. Still to this day, they have to share for survival. For example, the fishermen would share with the hunters. When we're young, people have to share, and they help one another. Somebody made a boat, built a boat, everybody would come and help. No charge, they would help. They would just help one another. Build your home. And that's the way of our ancestors still to this day. And so Thanksgiving to us is most more than the giving thanks. Oh, thank you for the turkey. Thank you. No. It's giving thanks for so many things. Giving thanks for our ancestors, because I'll tell you, Indigenous people, when we make that spirit dish, we believe that our ancestors, so when we eat our ancestors, it's symbolic. You know, they don't come down physically eat the food, but we give them the first and the best. We're acknowledging them. And every ceremony that Indigenous people do, our pipe ceremonies, our sweat lodges, every ceremony that we do, we are acknowledging our ancestors, the ones that went before us. We know that in the spirit world, they watch over us. We offer our prayers to the Creator, but we also offer our prayers to the ones that went before us. And we carry our ancestors in our veins, all of us, all people. In our veins is the DNA, you know, of our ancestors. They are within us. They run within our veins. So, for example, my veins, my mom and dad who passed away, my grandparents, so forth, all the way back. And so we believe that our ancestors, when we do ceremonies, we are acknowledging them and we are requesting their help.
The moment of silence is over.
And that was longtime Indigenous cultural educator and elder Donna Augustine speaking on the demythologizing and deconstructing of the Thanksgiving Day holiday here on American Indian Airwaves. That concludes our show for today. A special thank you to our guests, Kawasente McGregor, Melody Talcott, and Donna Augustine. A special thank you to our musical guests, Aragon Star, Kupa Aina, Sandra Sutter, and the band Blackfire. American Indian Airwaves is mixed and mastered in the studios of Burnt Swamp Studios in Signal Hill, California. For Marcus Lopez, I've been your host for the hour, Larry Smith. Until next time.
Why your freedom manifests on their graves, and the blood never comes clean from their guilty minds, nor the hands that hold the chains. against our fears. Try not to become what we've endured. Wearing our souls on a thread. The moment of silence is over.
Radio's greatest application is in broadcasting mass entertainment. Probably one of the best ways to get started is to make it a hobby and build an amateur station. It will show you more quickly than anything else whether or not you can succeed in radio.
KBOO, Portland.
On the next episode of Voices for the Animals,